Hello, everybody. I am Russ Cannelli, and this is El Paso Primetime. And I'm a researcher here at UTEP, and I spent a lot of my life trying to remove sulfur from gasolines and so on. But today we have a gentleman. His name is Dr. David Koch from Lamar University. He's the Guild Chair of Chemical Engineering there, and he's going to tell us why, for our health, it's important that we have sulfur. Sulfur chemistry and health. David, welcome to El Paso Prime.
Thank you, Russ. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk about something that I've been intimately concerned with for about 8 years.
Well, you had a similar situation where you used to work for Union Oil Products, UOP, right?
Right, and we spent a lot of time competing with your company, Exxon, on how to get sulfur out of the feedstock for petroleum refineries. And at that time, I never really considered just how important sulfur is for the health of the human body.
All right. Well, sulfur for the health of the human body, I know that when we did studies of the petroleum spills, the microorganisms would, if you starved them of sulfur, would go in and get it out of the petroleum and break up the petroleum because they needed it for their own health.
Absolutely. It is a basic element for life in all the forms that we have on the earth today. It has a very interesting chemical characteristic of being easily oxidized or reduced, which allows systems to accommodate to their environment, whether it's oxidative or reductive.
So most all organisms, starting with very small organisms, algae or micro any kind. Give us an example of some of the things that these organisms need.
Well, basically, you have organisms that have internal structures, usually single-cell or multi-cell structures. They produce inside the cell various proteins, and those proteins require sulfur for their final form. By bonding one sulfur atom to another. And so it becomes a very important characteristic of plants and animals that you have plenty of sulfur available. The unfortunate situation we have in the world today, particularly in over-fertilized and overused land, is that we're depleting the sulfur, and so we're not getting sulfur in our plants as much as we did in the past. And so when we consume non-meat or even meat products, there's not generally as much sulfur there as in the past. So we are sulfur-starved as a
raises a question because when we're farming or when we were trying to enhance the microcarbon degraders, we always added nitrogen and phosphorus, and they would grow faster. How come we don't add sulfur to the farms?
It's an interesting question because back in the past I worked on removing sulfur from power plants. As you know, they produce quantities of SO2, and we take that out usually with a lime or calcium oxide and make a calcium sulfate. One of the ways we were exploring disposing of that calcium sulfate was to spread it on rangeland, and it actually produced a better release of nutrients from the soil as well as faster growth for the plants. So it is an important nutrient.
Well, that's quite interesting, and maybe some of the farmers out there will tell us about this, or maybe there'll be a new invention for growing plants faster. But what you're saying is that if the sulfur is taken out of the earth, that the plants won't grow well.
Right. Well, we have an element, sulfur, that has a very interesting characteristic. It can be reduced in its most reduced form of hydrogen sulfide, which we all know is a part of petroleum processing.
And it's quite poisonous, too.
It's quite poisonous, but as it turns out, hydrogen sulfide is actually a signaling molecule within our body that's essential. So we are producing it inside the body. And on the other end of the spectrum of oxidation, you have sulfate. So you have the possibility of getting sulfur in the body from sulfates. Mainly our sulfur comes from the diet, and our supplements. So one of the things I would like to talk about today is if we can't get enough from our diet, we definitely need to supplement our diet with sulfur-bearing supplements. And also, I'll mention a little later how it's very important to handle some major diseases.
With sulfur. Could you give us a little more background as to why sulfur is important in humans?
Well, we have in every cell, we have a mechanism that takes in our food products, mainly glucose, and transfers that into a very energetic molecule that is produced in the mitochondria. And in that process, you produce, in many cases, super reactive oxidation species. And these reactive oxidation species can degrade many things in your body, cell walls, proteins, genes, DNA, RNA, etc. So it's important that the body suppress those reactive species, even though they are important in areas where you have inflammation and infection. Generally speaking, you want to keep those at bay, and that's what sulfur does in the body. It's with a molecule called glutathione. It tends to mediate any of the over-oxidation possibilities you have in the body.
So you need to have sulfur as sort of a additional addition to your vitamins that you take every morning, like vitamin C and whatever else you
take.
Yeah,
vitamin B1 is a good source of sulfur, as well as you can come in with some special supplements, alpha lipoic acid, N-acetylcysteine, and there's other sources as well. But it's vitally important if you have an aberration in your system that keeps your body from over-oxidizing, that you get plenty of that sulfur available to you. The problem that I've run onto is that if a person is exposed over long periods of time to what we call a xenobiotic, anthropogenic xenobiotic, meaning it's made by man, for example, a solvent in a printing shop, for example.
So you say xenobiotic, that means a product of man.
No, xenobiotic is something that shouldn't be in your body, and anthropogenic would be made by man.
Anthropogenic, yeah, okay.
But any chemical that shouldn't be in your body, we call xenobiotics. But the interesting situation is that you normally don't realize you're being exposed to this, and ultimately you can have some bad consequences, either development of an autoimmune disease, maybe putting you in a position of being more susceptible to cancer, for example, or other diseases. So I think keeping this sulfur balance in your body is ultra important. And this is generally talked about quite a bit on health programs, and you can look it up on or Google it. You'll see that everybody realizes this. And so there is quite a bit of supplementing going on out there. But in terms of protecting your body, you want to make sure that you have the proper balance in those sulfur compounds in the body.
Are there any natural foods that are better for sulfur than others?
Oh, absolutely. You know, your coniferous vegetables, broccoli, green vegetables, any kind of greens, but particularly onions and garlic is a great source of sulfur. I can't recommend you overdosing on those because they have other consequences, but I think supplements are a really neat way to go to keep that in balance.
Yeah, I remember stories that are 200 years old that in Europe the people that were using horses for pulling carts or whatever would feed them buckets of garlic, that the horses were eating buckets of garlic, and the people recognized that when that happened, the horses lived longer and had stronger lives.
Yeah, and there is a lot of historical significance of garlic warding off diseases, and a lot of diseases can be helped by consuming garlic. And, of course, in any supplement store, you can find garlic tablets there or garlic capsules. So It's a great source, natural source. The whole spectrum of keeping your body in the proper oxidative state is something that many research institutions around the world realize that oxidative stress is a major contributing factor, but there's no single pill to take care of that. It's a lifestyle. It's how you handle your diet and how you take the proper kinds of supplements.
Tell us a little bit more about oxidative stress. I mean, you talked about how sulfur can lower that. But basically, is that something that's created? Well, I know you've said it's created by the diet, but is that also created by the way you think?
Well, it could. I think folks like you and I that overthink about our science could have some problems.
But of course, it's stress. Yeah.
But stress is one of the contributing factors. You can also have a whole range of things. Constant body being attacked by bacteria or virons or viruses, as well as being exposed to chemicals, all contribute to this degree of oxidative stress.
Well, I think a lot of us out there, we know what stress is and what causes it. But what is the difference between normal stress and oxidative stress?
Well, oxidative stress means that, you know, at the molecular level, you're not taking care of those reactive oxidation species properly.
So these are sort of bad chemicals?
These are bad chemicals that tend to oxidize your proteins. They can affect your cellular structure.
You were saying in the beginning that attack cell walls and do all kinds of
exactly,
bad
and,
chemistry.
And what would ultimately be a consequence might be an autoimmune disease. It might be rheumatoid arthritis or scleroderma or even type 2 diabetes. So it's that level of stress. We're talking about a stress at the chemical level, not at the mental level. So
yeah, okay, I got it now. So it's a chemical stress, and I guess there's no such thing as reductive stress. I don't know.
Well, not since we're oxygen-breathing species,
okay.
So we depend on the oxygen to produce the energy that we use in the body. So we're dependent on it. We're not going to get away from it. So we might as well mediate it. So.
Well, I would like everybody out there to realize that though we are professionals, Dr. Chianelli and Dr. Koch, we're not medical doctors, and we're doing a lot of talking about medicine and diseases, and I hope you all realize that. However, you do talk about autoimmune diseases. Can you talk a little bit? What is an autoimmune disease?
Well, an autoimmune disease is a condition that usually we in the professions don't understand how it had a it was generated. We have some good ideas growing now. But this is where your immune systems begin to attack your own body parts, your own cells. And it can be very local, or it can be what we call systemic. And systemic being probably the most difficult one to handle, as well as being the most dangerous. And it is turns out that females are much more susceptible to autoimmune conditions than males. In certain cases, up to four times the possibility
rate
of getting it. Yeah. And so it also has to do a lot with hormones and how the body is working to optimize the systems that do oxidative stress. I know that, for example, in women who get pregnant, sometimes that reduces the level of the autoimmune disease, or reduces the symptoms. But this is something that should be a major concern to society. We have over 80 different kinds of autoimmune diseases. There is over 50 million people in the U.S. at any given time with an autoimmune disease. It's one of our most costly medical condition.
You know, it's funny. It sounds to me like it should be called auto non-immune. An autoimmune.
Yeah, well, the auto means that it's attacking itself, yourself. But the immune system is absolutely essential for us, our survival. It's a very complicated system, and it depends on a lot of cells, a lot of immune cells that are created in the body, mast cells, B and T cells, et cetera, that can be negatively affected by this oxidative stress. So that's one of the things that you can do to minimize the possibility of getting these kind of conditions if you take care of your diet and your general health, as well as look at having the proper amount of sulfur coming into the body.
Okay, I know that diabetes type 2 is an autoimmune disease. We did a program a number of years ago on that. But give us some other examples, please, if you would.
Well, I think the most one that most people know about is rheumatoid arthritis. It, of course, affects the joints and eventually causes inflammation in the joints and causes destruction of the joint. That's one that's devastating. The one that I particularly am concerned with is scleroderma. Scleroderma is not generally known to the public, but it is a devastating disease that average lifespan with systemic scleroderma is about 5 years.
What are the symptoms? I that's not familiar with me.
Well, it attacks the skin. It causes excessive collagen production in the skin. It also causes vascular collapse. So at the same time your skin is thickening and you're not being able to move, you're losing blood flow, and so it generally affects the extremities, the fingers and the toes and hands, et cetera, are some of the first things that are negatively affected. You get
negatively
ulceration, amputation. Ultimately, it affects, because it's systemic, it affects all the organs in the body, the kidneys, the lungs, the liver, the heart. Death is usually caused by either renal collapse or lung function failure, or your heart is negatively affected. So
now you've had some experience with autoimmune disease. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I got into this business about 8 years ago.
Because of a friend. Huh?
When a friend got autoimmune a disease, it was called scleroderma that I'm talking about, and was given 2 years to live. It was systemic, and it was one of the most rapidly progressing diseases that I've seen. You know, cancer takes some time, et cetera, but this was a massive attack on the body. So at that time, I'd never heard of the disease, but being a chemist with a reasonable ability to think, I started studying biochemistry to see if I couldn't do something about it. And so this is where I began to realize the importance of sulfur in keeping your oxidative stress at bay, and also finding physicians that will work with you. You certainly, if you have an autoimmune disease, you certainly need to have medical support from a medical professional.
All right, sure. But in this particular case, you connected this disease with a lack of sulfur?
I first connected it with the occupation of this person, being exposed to some chlorinated organic solvents over 20 years. That's one of the established causes of it. So initially you realize, hey, this person has been exposed over the years, not realizing you were doing damage to the body. And so ultimately the oxidative stress overcomes the protection you have with the sulfur system and begins to affect the genetics. It begins to damage your DNA and RNA, and also has this effect of being a major contributor to something we call epigenetics, which goes beyond your inherent genes. Your epigenetic system is a resultant of the genetic response to your environment and affects some chemical reactions that are very important to the function of your genes called methanation. And, of course, you're well aware of methane and how do you move around a little group. Methyl group is ultimately important to how your body functions.
And so you recommended to this person to do something?
Well, first I recommended that we look at getting professional help.
Yeah, sure.
And so we did find a physician that would work somewhat outside the box, being willing to consider alternative medical procedures, but also realizing that antibiotics have a positive effect on reducing inflammation. And so getting prescribed the proper kinds of antibiotics and then working with the sulfur system purely on a supplemental basis, non-medical basis.
So this friend of yours that was supposed to live 2 years, how long has he survived now?
9 years.
Nine years.
So it's very important. There is a book out there called The Way Back. If you do have an autoimmune disease, you should read that book.
You know the author?
Unfortunately, at this point in time, I can't remember it.
All right,
but
you know, this is a fascinating discussion.
Perhaps Dr. Brown, you have two schools of thought. One was that autoimmune diseases was caused by a certain kind of bacterium, a mycoplasma that doesn't have a cell wall, very hard to identify microscopically, and was proven in many thousands of patients that antibiotic treatment did help. And then on the other side, there was a fellow by the name of Stanley Jacob that realized how important sulfur was.
All right. And so we could talk about this for a long time. We're running out of time. But you're also the founder and associate director of Lamar Center for Innovation, Commercialization, and Entrepreneurship. Could you tell us a little bit about that in the last moments?
Well, we have in our university systems, you know, the opportunity of discovery of some very wonderful things for society, and a lot of things have come out of universities. But a lot of times discoveries at universities get published, and it's a rather long time before they're picked up by the commercial people and moved into a product. This Center for Innovation, Commercialization, Entrepreneurship is to help move research discoveries faster into commercialization, and at the same time bring it to those folks that are good at entrepreneurship and to get these products out of the university.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating, and I would say that one of our prime motives here is to try to get the students and professors to think a little bit more about how their research can help people or make money.
Exactly. And I think what I realized in dealing with my studies in autoimmune diseases is that there's no magic bullet out there. There's no one or two drugs that are going to solve these things. It's going to be a very innovative approach using multiple methods to overcome these things. At the same time, it means that you must be able to think more generally about any kind of research situation you're in at a university and making sure that you can see the broader picture when you get results.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing, and it also involves interdisciplinary interactions where if you're talking about a molecule that has a certain structure, you ought to talk to the biologists and the various people that can get it out there to the public.
Absolutely. And at my university, Lamar University, we've just formed a biotech and bioscience team of 15 faculty members that covers all disciplines in engineering, computer science, biology, chemistry. And we're hoping to bring that ability to think associatively together. That means you associate whatever different sciences can see in any given set of data or any given result, and hopefully see something that is disruptive in terms of the economy or in terms of a product or for the betterment of humans.
Okay, what again, we're running out of time here, but what do you see in the future? What are you going to do? What intrigues you?
Well, what intrigues me is the absolute beauty of life, of the biochemistry behind it. It is a fascinating area. It is a very complicated area, so you have specialists all over the place, and I think in that region we have the opportunity for associative thinking, some very innovative approaches. We are getting to the point of what some people call exponential medicine. We have...
What does that mean, exponential medicine?
Exponential medicines means
you take 100 different...
That you're going to see things change exponentially over the next years.
And oh, I see. Okay.
Because we're going to be wearing diagnostics that's going to give us a constant state of our health. We're going to have interventions that are not even foreseen today. We're better understanding how our immune system works, and we're beginning to get biologics that these are specifically targeted molecules that can go in and tweak the immune system. And the latest thing on the exponential medicine scene is something we call CRISPR, which is using some very interesting things that bacteria do to defend themselves against viruses. We have developed methods of going in and clipping out parts of our genetic material and fixing it with high precision. And so that's what I mean by exponential medicine.
Well, Dr. Koch, we're very happy to have you here, and we welcome you back. And I think that a lot of the people out there can think about if you are working and doing research. I remember a Nobel Prize winner telling me, he was a cancer guy, said, if you do basic research every day and you are not thinking about how you help the people with cancer, then you're, and he used a lot of blank words. So thanks. Our guest was Dr. David Koch from Lamar University, the Guild Chair of Chemical Engineering and the Associate Director and Founder of the Center for Innovation, Commercialization, and Entrepreneurship. Thanks very much for being here, David. And thanks to Dennis Wu, our producer.